Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, Augustine loses voice that time. Denny, hello, everybody. Welcome aboard Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Tuesday. Yeah, forgot what day it was already. Hope you're having a good start to your week, and if not, we can help you get going that way. Another fun day coming. Mike DeCourcy will join us. We'll hear from Kurt Cignetti. We'll hear from Darren DeVries and maybe a few others. Maybe Fernando, maybe Tucker DeVries. We've got all kinds of stuff to get to. Mike DeCourcy will join us on the program today, as will J.D. Campbell later. So plenty to talk about. Last night, NFL, Monday Night Football going on. I'm sure some of you didn't even get to see it with the YouTube ESPN brouhaha going on, which is crap. And what a boring game. First Monday Night Football game to end in a 0-0 tie at the half since 2009, I saw. So, still a close game. 17 whopping points scored in the second half. Eagles take it over the Packers on Lambeau Field, on the frozen tundra of Green Bay. The frozen tundra of southern India, Bloomington right now. Man, supposed to warm up. Speaking of which, what is the forecast? What is your forecast? So looking at the extended forecast. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. High of 43 today. We'll get by it. Some snow flurries out there. Jumps up to 59 tomorrow. Man, time out. 62 Thursday, 64 Friday. Hello, Saturday, 71 degrees and sunshine. People, you should be packing that stadium and keeping it full for the last game of the season. Don was on with me yesterday, Fish, the voice of the Hoosiers, and he said that was the one message from Kurt Cignetti. And you know what? I don't think it's too much to ask, people. Let's be serious here. That sounded like a Joe Biden imitation or an imitation of Dana Carvey doing Joe Biden. Let's be serious here. No, I'm serious. I'm being serious. No, what's that? No, seriously. This team deserves it. They've given you back-to-back 10-0 seasons. They're going for 11-0. They're going for 12-0. They're going for a Big Ten championship. Send them away with, especially it's senior day. Send those seniors out with the proper respect. You can't hang out. Hell, isn't it a noon game? Got plenty of time, man. So, yeah, hang out and support. Give those seniors what they deserve. Send them away with the respect that they've earned. Send those seniors away like an elite program should. You want elite football? Well, an elite football program needs elite fans. So, be elite fans. Hang it out. Let's see. I am wearing... Gritty says she's wearing shorts on Saturday. Well, hell, why not? It's going to be 71. I'm walking around yesterday with as my heaviest coat that I have. And we're talking about shorts, maybe t-shirts on Saturday. That's okay. That's perfect. I guess God said, hey, it's been a hell of a season for the Hoosiers. Let me help them out with a great send-off on Saturday for their last home game. It's Russell, it's not about filling the seats. It's about keeping them filled. They are sold out. It's about staying, Russell. It's about not leaving at halftime. That's what we're talking about. Stay until the fourth quarter is over. Stay until the game ends. Thank you, John. We'll hear from John is commenting on my question yesterday to Sig at the presser, which I asked two questions yesterday. Normally, you just get one, but I was like, you know what? This is kind of similar, so I'm going to ask both of these. And first, I asked Sig about Fernando. If you've watched Fernando Mendoza during his post-game TV interviews, he cracks me up, man. I mean, cracks me up. This dude answers whatever question they pose to him. I don't even think the question matters. He's just waiting to get the microphone. And they might as well just hand him the mic and step away. Because as soon as it's his time to talk, he takes over. It becomes the Fernando show or the Heisman Doza show. He looks right into the camera and he gives his glory. He gives his gratitudes to his teammates like a NASCAR veteran thanking all of his sponsors, looking into the camera and has this confidence that is amazing. And it's kind of wild to watch. The confidence that takes, that is why he was able to do what he was able to do Saturday. That's who he is. He's not cocky at all. But the dude has the greatest confidence in himself and his teammates. And that is a trait that carries to what he does. That is why he'll be a good NFL quarterback. I mean, it's amazing. I love watching it, to be honest with you. He cracks me up. Robert says, for what it's worth, he's wearing shorts right now. Getting back to that. As long as you're not short shorts, man, we're good. No Speedos. Brian says, I just lost that question. Brian says Memorial Stadium needs a nickname. It has one, man. Where you been? The Rock. Do you not listen to Don Fisher? Welcome here to The Rock, Indiana's Memorial Stadium. Merchant Bank Field. Yeah, it's called The Rock, man. Seriously? It has been called The Rock. And it has a great reason for that. The big piece of limestone rock that I think Terry Heppner had brought in. Didn't Terry Heppner have that brought in? But that is a big part of the walk. It was moved from the end zone where the team used to come out and placed in front of the stadium where they do their walk. Now everyone can see and touch the rock. Now the Oregon Ducks can also come put their duck on the rock. But you see what that got them, don't you? That little ducky got spanked. So Yeah, there you go. Here's what, as we head into, you know what, I'll wait till the other side. When we come back, we'll hear Coach Cignetti talking about Fernando's aplomb at being at his TV appearances. Glad to have you guys along on this warmer, it's a warmer Tuesday. We're back with plenty more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. As we fly along right after this. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. Looking forward to Mike DeCourcy joining us at his earliest convenience. And making sure, there we go. I see Mike right now. Got to get him in some room in here. Mike, how are you, my friend? I had to make room for you.
How are you, Jim? Great to see you.
Great. Just enjoying this cold snap. I left on Saturday for Chicago to go up for the basketball game. Got up there, and then it rained that night, and then it turned cold. And then the next time, I'm like, they're expecting 5 to 8 inches of snow. I got to get the hell out of here Sunday. And then I started, as I'm heading back to Indiana, I'm like, well, hell, they already got snow here. I'm coming back to blizzard-like conditions. Now, Saturday, Mike, it's going to be 71 degrees for the football game. They're trying to get us sick. Things are rolling. A big weekend for Indiana. Big weekend in sports. The Colts are rolling, man. A big win over in Berlin. And then, of course, Indiana's unbelievable win in Happy Valley over Penn State. And then on Sunday up in Chicago at the United Center, Indiana basketball taking a Marquette. Another litmus test for us to watch. And I'm sure you paid close attention to that game with your duties. And I'll be honest with you. Like, I was pretty impressed with what they were able to accomplish because, first of all, I knew going into the game, they're shorthanded. And then as soon as the game starts, they're in foul trouble from the beginning. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. There's no way they're going to be able to withstand these fouls because I saw them adding up at the guard where they're already really thin. But, boy, they were able to withstand it. Only one guy fouled out remarkably after because there was an early point in which five of the eight players that were able to play had three or more fouls early on.
Well, they overwhelmed at the offensive end. They just absolutely dominated Marquette. Remember, we talked last week about the fact that Marquette doesn't have a lot of strength. I think size is probably not accurate because Ben Gold's a tall guy, but it's not a power team. So it was kind of for if Indiana's going to play a high major opponent at this stage, it was probably the right high major opponent in the sense of they're not going to punish you inside where Indiana is not as strong at this point. They're still developing. I thought Sam Alexis though gave them a lot of excellent play on the inside. He's been really good so far for the Hoosiers, and that's been a huge development because the one area of this team that you have questions about. I think Connor Enright hasn't played great yet, but I think I've seen him play really well for DePaul last year. I think he'll get it and get right. But the one area of this team that it's fair to have questions about is the interior. And so you get past that when you're playing Marquette. They're not going to punish you much. And so you can work on the things that you're good at in a lot of ways. And the offensive side, the ability to move the basketball. I mean, I talked about Enright not playing great. I mean, he has moved the basketball. He just hasn't been as consistent as an individual offensive player as he has been in the past. But they moved the basketball with just brilliantly. And they had a 27 assists in that game, which is a phenomenal number, 27 assists on 33 field goals. They also got They also got to the line 24 times and converted 20 of those. So they are not wasting opportunities, Indiana. It's a really nice start for the Hoosiers as they try to build toward competing in a Big Ten that I think we all expect to be significant. Not a lot of easy games. And they will play K-State coming up. They're going to have to get through their bye type games over the next couple of weeks. But then they have the K-State game, and it's not long after that that league play starts. And they have Louisville and Kentucky. That stretch, Minnesota, Louisville, Penn State, Kentucky. It starts to get real in a hurry.
Yes, it does, because you play Kentucky at Rupp Arena, so that's going to be quite the experience for those guys. But it'll be interesting as they continue to move forward to see, because the one thing I've said over and over, and it's obvious, it's not like I'm a genius here. They live and die by the three, though. If there's a night where the three is not going down, I don't know that they have anything that they're going to be able to win with. It's going to be very difficult for Indiana on nights when the three is just not falling like it did on Sunday. My God, just between Tucker DeVries and Lamar Wilkerson, 12 threes knocked down, 63%. And they did it on between them, 63%. That's remarkable. A number, because it was funny too, though. I mean, Tucker DeVries was feeling it because he came down and he tried a heat check from downtown Chicago, and it didn't go down. But it was sure fun to watch, and fun to watch when they got that rolling. But
I don't think there's anything wrong with being a perimeter based offense, and
that's what you are. So you got to do what you are.
But I don't think that you can say, if you're a team, like, guys have off shooting nights. I mean, Steph Curry, who's the greatest shooter who ever lived, has off shooting nights and has had them. And not just because he's getting older, but he had them in his prime. Guys are going to have off shooting nights. So you do have to have a counter for that. And I think that's where Enright being a little bit more individually productive will help. I thought Trent Sisley having a really nice game against a significant high major opponent on Sunday was important. Him putting up 15 points without making shots from deep. Most of his misses, in fact, in that game were from deep. Getting him involved and getting him some confidence will help them. And I mentioned Sam Alexis before, who's not really a shooter. I thought he was really good on Sunday. A guy whose performance caught your eye. If everybody just about on this team is new to the Hoosiers, new to Hoosiers fans. So you're watching guys. Maybe I'm not watching Tucker DeVries for the first time. I've seen him play a lot, but I'm not watching Enright for the first time. But I'm watching all of them as Hoosiers for the first time. And Alexis, honestly, is someone that I had not seen a lot in prior circumstances. And so he is somebody who immediately caught my eye. I mean, he did play at Florida last year, but just was a guy. I mean, just somebody that
bench. He was a bench guy
for minutes. Yeah, and now he's more of a featured player. And I think in on those nights when Tucker has a tough shooting night, for instance, guys like Alexis and Trent Sisley are going to have to play well. And I thought them playing as they did against Marquette was definitely a good sign.
Well, here's what happened is Reed Bailey starts the game. He played 3 minutes and was out, and Sam Alexis comes in and ends up playing 26 minutes and goes 4 of 6 from the field, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. And that's another thing about this Indiana team. They are prolific at the free throw line as well.
Right.
Something Indiana fans have been boring about for years, as it's been horrible. And I understand, because I still say I could shoot 70% right now. And but they're shooting at a like 89-90% clip each game, and 20 of 24 against Marquette. Now, they did allow Marquette to get to the line 33 times, in which they hit 29. So it was a quite the free throw shooting day. Both teams over 80%. You don't see that very often with that many free throws shot. But regardless, for Indiana fans to see that, all right, they're going to hit their free throws. A lot of and ones that they completed, where I was so used to the last couple of years, they'd have those opportunities, lost. They've got guys that can make plays. They've got guys that are still learning. Trent Sisley, he's going to take his beats and bumps as he's a freshman, right. But he's adding some solid minutes along the way. He played 30 minutes in that game. That's a lot of minutes for a freshman, and he goes 7 of 12. Now, one of four from the 3-point line. He brought their percentage down there a little bit, but hey, that's a pretty damn good day's work for a freshman in there.
Oh, absolutely. I do think that he's going to have to be an important player for Indiana if they're going to succeed at the level possible for them. And I think most of the projections that I've seen are probably somewhere in the top seven or so of this conference, seven, eight, maybe a few down at 8, 9. But as I've said before, if you're in the top 9 in this conference, you're competing for an NCAA bid. No doubt in my mind. That doesn't mean they're going to get 9, but if you're in that group, you're competing for a bid. And so I do think that they have the possibility of getting to March. And as well, I think that what they're showing, and Darren DeVries is a terrific coach. I mean, his work at Drake was impeccable. And he did a really nice job at West Virginia through an avalanche of injuries that very few coaches have ever had to cope with and still nearly make the NCAA tournament, including Tucker. And, you know, that turned out to be fortuitous for Indiana because
exactly
if he had it certainly didn't help the Mountaineers last year to have Tucker gone most of the year. But because it happened, he had eligibility for the Hoosiers this year, and it's working out as well as might have been expected. He's a terrific talent. But what Darren is doing is establishing this is who the Hoosiers are going to be. And we'll be, and I think in future years, we'll be better at being this, but this is what they're going to be. They're going to run great offense. They're going to make shots. They're going to put the opposing defenses in difficult situations. The goal would be to eventually do it with even more talented players than the group they have now, whether it's guys coming out of high school or transfer portal guys. They will, goodness gracious, I mean, with what's going on in college basketball now, I don't think that you can seal off the idea of looking in Europe or Australia for talent either. I think you have to consider all avenues and possibilities. You see, the young man who's playing for Virginia Tech right now, who lit up the skies the other night with a brilliant performance. And you see what Illinois is planning to do with their group. They haven't really had a chance to test it yet, but they will, I think, tonight. They've got a big game coming. And you'll see some of these international players making a difference. And I think that's something that would very much fit into the system, the approach that Coach DeVries wants to take. So I suspect that eventually they'll look in that direction as well.
Yeah, and right now they've just got to get healthy. They've got too many guys that are on the IR, man. They're so thin, eight deep, and that's including Trent, who's a freshman, which is fine. He's not your average freshman, but you still would like to have Nick Dorn and Josh Harris. Harris is going to be a big help and able to give Sam Alexis some help down low. They definitely, they've got to get healthy and get healthy quick because, hey, the season's here, man, and it's starting. Indiana's next game tomorrow night against Milwaukee, which that should give them an opportunity to work some things out as well. But, hey, man, you never know. Everybody plays hard, and you have a target on your back, and so you've got to come ready, and I think Indiana will. It'll be a big home game for them. So with everything going so well for Hoosier fans right now, I expect that there'll be a big crowd out there, and especially get in out of the cold anyway. someplace warm. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they come back and perform after that win. And but man, they've got to get healthy, Mike.
Yeah, but they do have a little time. I mentioned the K-State game. That's at the end of the month. The big stretch of the two conference games and the two terrific opponents from down south there across the border in Kentucky. All that comes up in early December. So there's a little time to get more healthy before the bigger tests develop, before they arrive on the schedule. I'm not sure what the time frame is on the two injured players or how long it'll take before they're ready to go. But I do think that they at least have a little bit of luxury of time to either get them back or develop to the best version of this Indiana that's available before they start to play the high major opponents.
I agree. And they're we don't know who's, well, speaking of the Big Ten, the AP poll came out latest yesterday. Purdue gets jumped by Houston, which I'm still, I think that's accurate, but I'm trying to add the points and I don't get it, because Purdue had 36 first place votes, Houston had 16. And I'm like, how is that possible when you have that many more first place votes? If it was kind of close or something, I'd understand, but it was not. And I'm like, and so I'm looking through the votes, and I know that there were people that have Purdue in other places. I guess maybe it's because Houston was like second or first, and that's it. But I'll be honest with you, that's coming off of Purdue's lackluster 10-point win. I forget who they played. It was one of those.
Oakland.
Oakland, yeah. And I don't even know, was that Oakland of California or Oakland?
No, it's the Oakland that beat Kentucky in the NCAA tournament. Hasn't been that long, right? And nearly made the Sweet 16 a couple of years ago. Greg Campy, terrific coach, been at Oakland forever, and has done a wonderful job there. And it wasn't a good performance. They have injuries as well, and that's made a difference. But I try to tell everyone the polls are absolutely worthless. And yes. And what's interesting is what follows off of that is that the polls in football are just as bad. And they still have more influence. And in the sense that the College Football Playoff Committee comes out with their rankings last Tuesday, and they'll do it again tonight. And their rankings are almost a carbon copy of the AP poll, and therefore just horrifically worthless. I mean, how is Notre Dame a top 10 team right now in football, Jim?
My opinion is the reason is because the proliferation of these mega conferences. You cannot tell how good teams really are because they're not playing. It's not microed enough. You need to micro these conferences and say, all right, who is good out of this group? Who's good out of this group over here? When you spread it out so much, Indiana's not playing USC. Indiana's not playing Michigan. Indiana's not playing, so, you know, whoever. It's the same with Ohio State or whomever. You know, you don't have that. In the SEC, you don't have it. They have more of it, but there's teams that don't play. You can't tell now, especially now. It was before maybe a little easier, but now no, because everybody is better. But even though they're better, they're not all getting that same consideration. You know, we could use Indiana as an example. It's easy, but you know what I'm saying? There's bias against these teams. I don't care if it's a team out in the Big 12 or whatever, there's bias. And it's just, these mega conferences have just made it too difficult to really see who's good.
But it's not that hard to see that a team lost to Texas A&M and lost to Miami, and therefore has two losses.
A Miami team is not very good. I mean, it's okay. But
wait a second. I mean, if they're not very good,
I mean by not great, they're not a top 10 team.
Okay, then why is Notre Dame a top 10 team? Because they lost to Miami.
I don't believe they are either. I agree with you.
That's the point I'm making, is that those two teams played one another. They have the equivalent number of losses, whereas Miami can point to and say, hey, we beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame can point to they beat SC. That's the only significant victory that they have. And that's what, the sixth best team in the Big Ten, maybe? And that was a home game that they won by 10 points. And yet somehow, because they're Notre Dame, that gets regarded as a top 10 team. Because they're Notre Dame, and because they win a lot of games against bad teams by a lot of points. They play pretty. That's not how sports should work. And that's one of the reasons why, look, as you know, I've done the bracket projections for Fox Sports for the last 6 years. And before that, I went to the NCAA's mock bracket selection exercise 4 times. So of the people who are not in the room, I know about as much about how the process works as anyone. And the process in college basketball makes sense. Doesn't always get it right, but the process makes sense. The college football process makes no sense. The college football process, they avoid logic and they avoid achievement because it's uncomfortable. Because if you do it that way, if you pay attention to what someone's actually done and not how someone looks, then you have to get into making tough decisions. Hey, you know what? Notre Dame, you know, they're like a big program and they're a big brand, and we'd love to have them in our playoff because it gets good TV ratings and all that. But shouldn't they have to beat somebody to get in this thing? Shouldn't they have to beat someone of consequence? Okay, so they had 2 difficult games so far. One was on the road. You know, Miami on the road, not easy. Texas A&M, they had at home. They couldn't get it done. So then they beat Southern Cal, which is a mid-level, I think it's fair to say, maybe slightly upper quadrant Big Ten team.
Exactly.
Yep. Maybe. And that's it. And then all they have left, the most difficult game they will have for the remainder of the year, is Pitt this Saturday. Pitt is a team that has 2 losses, that's contending for the ACC title. But still really hasn't established how good it is, because most of the victories that they've had recently have been against lesser opponents. They put a new quarterback in, and they're undefeated with that player, Mason Heinschel, a freshman who's very talented. We don't know how he'll hold up against a major opposition. They will get major opposition down the stretch. They have Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Miami. So we'll find out what they're capable of. But in all, this is not a team that you would say, okay, if Notre Dame can beat them, they're clearly a playoff team. No, Notre Dame should be like at the back of the line hanging out, like, you know, like outside a Broadway theater to see if there's any extra tickets. And then at the last minute, you know, somebody doesn't show and they put it up for sale, and then you can go into the box office and get it. That's what Notre Dame
should be. That is a great analogy. What a wonderful analogy that is. You've got to put that in an article ASAP, baby. That is great. I love that. Let's take a quick break and continue this conversation. I love it, because it's the question is, though, who belongs in the top 10 at that bottom part? We'll talk about that and much more when we return to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, and I'm Jim Coyne.
I did get a little choked up there at the end, just because I was so proud of our guys, and, you know, our backs were against the wall there, and boy, it wasn't looking very good. And in that venue, 105,000 people, and Penn State was playing really well. And let me tell you, Penn State got players. I give them a lot of credit. I got a lot of respect for that program. That was a great place to play. Their fans were awesome. I mean, they had it cranked up, and we found a way to flip the switch and get the momentum back and make the plays. And it meant a lot. And I guess what part of it, probably I was thinking back a little bit. You know, my first time in that stadium was 1971, and every 2 years I was in that stadium for about 15, 16 years. And I can tell you there were a lot of long rides home, not many happy rides home. So that one meant a lot. And you think about my journey, right, 10, 15 years ago, Did I ever think I'd lead a team into that stadium? No. Lead a team into that stadium victorious? You know, so I think, but it was mainly centered around how our guys responded and the challenge and that they overcame to get it done.
That was, of course, the coach, Kurt Cignetti. Let's see. I'm trying to get us back on here, Mike. There we go. All right. Yeah, that was, I asked him another question right before that, but about Fernando. And Fernando was a plum at, I'll play that for you. It was a quicker one. But he damn near went to tears. You could tell. And I was like, wow. So, you know, I asked him that, you know, obviously he was very emotional and said, you seemed on the verge of tears there. And he was very honest with his answers, as you could see.
Yeah. And I of course know a good bit about Kurt's history because we share a common hometown. And his brother, I believe, lives just a few miles from me now. And of course, I know
where is the University of Indiana University of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, IUP is about, I'm going to say, about 75 minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, maybe an hour and a half, somewhere in there.
So is he still coaching there?
His brother? No, Frank Jr.'s Frank? Last. Yeah, Frank is no. Frank now lives here in my area, in the Pittsburgh suburbs. I haven't checked on him for a year. When I did the article last year about Kurt being the Sporting News Coach of the Year, and a honor that. That he's not that far from contending for a second time, even though, you know,
that rarely happens that you give back to back. I was going to ask.
It's not out of the question.
How do you not give it to him if he goes 12-0 and wins the Big Ten title?
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be that. Yeah. If they win the, if they obviously have to finish it out. And then if they go into Indy and take out Ohio State, it is going to be hard to say no. It will. I mean, because it would be just an incredible achievement to be able to do that. So like I said, I same hometown. You know, I know IUP. My sister graduated from there. I know the program. I know the basketball coach there now very well. And so I know his history. But I had forgotten about the idea that he was going along with his dad all those years up to state college to see West Virginia play against Penn State, and also was playing in those games subsequent to just, you know, tagging along and all of that during his period as a Mountaineers quarterback. He was on the team in trips to state college. So I'd sort of forgotten all about that. When, you know, why would I have thought about it? Well, obviously, when Penn State fired James Franklin and everybody started talking about his connections to Pennsylvania, I'm like, he's not all that connected, so to speak, at Penn State. I mean, yeah, it's not exactly one of his places. Yes. He was a Penn guy. He was a West Virginia guy and all that.
His connections were not. And that's exactly what I'm like. You know what? The more I think about it, I go, yeah, I don't see it. I go, that was a little bit more of that.
Exactly. Exactly. But so to go in there and to go in on a day when the Hoosiers weren't great and on a day when Penn State was great. And Penn State's lost every high major game they've played so far. They played a very soft non-conference schedule, which I think was a mistake. And then they weren't ready quite all the way for Oregon, the challenge that Oregon brought. And all the avalanche of failure has brought them to here, including the decision to move on from James Franklin. But they're still a talented team, as Coach said. They still have players. I mean, some of those guys are still going to get drafted and all of that. And so it was a challenge to go in there on that day and pull off what they did. Even on the final drive before the pass that Mendoza made to Omar Cooper, the incredible catch that Cooper made, one of the great – I mean, honestly, like some of the plays that are celebrated in athletic history, the first one I thought of was Dwight Clark's catch for the Niners against the Cowboys back in 80 or 81 or whatever year it was, Like that was a wide open layup compared to what Cooper did. I mean, it was unbelievable what he accomplished there.
What Cooper did was like being on the high wire trapeze catching the football, doing a somersault, coming down and getting your feet inbounds.
To make the conscious decision that my right foot is going to hit first if I let it go while you're falling from what, 4 feet elevated?
4 feet in the air.
And so you have this much time to make that decision, but he says, my right foot's going to hit too soon, and I'm probably not going to be able to keep it in. But if I pull it up and let my left foot hit, I have a chance to be in bounds. And then to execute that and to execute the left foot in bounds all within a flash of a second. It's one of the great athletic feats we'll see, period. I mean, it's one of the great athletic feats we will ever see in the sport of football. I mean, it should go up there with the helmet catch and all that stuff. This was really difficult to achieve. And he pulled it off. And if he doesn't do that, look, Indiana still probably makes the Big Ten championship game if he doesn't do that. And Indiana still probably makes the college football playoff if he doesn't do that. But you know it changes everything, Jim, if they lose that game. It changes everything. It changes their seeding. It changes their horizon. It changes everything. And it changes
the perception. I mean, Indiana is working so hard to
– yes.
dispel the perceptions, and that would have just let that all come crumbling down. But I agree with you, that catch, I'll be honest with you, Charlie Becker's catch just before that with a hand literally in his face, falling out of bounds and able to get his foot to touch in bounds when his body was 2 feet out of bounds already, it seems like. And Charlie Becker, a guy who had 7 career receptions coming into that game, gets 7 catches in that day, goes over 100 yards receiving. Indiana keeps doing the next man up, man. It's not a falsity. So this is going to be fun watching Indiana and presumably Ohio State play for the Big Ten championship. You know, Ohio State still has to get by Michigan.
Yes.
If they lose to Michigan, it is Michigan in the Big Ten championship, ironically enough, because they only have I don't think they have a conference loss? Just one? And if they beat Ohio State, they'll have a tiebreaker over Ohio State. So
it's not going to be easy for them. Plus the games at the Big House.
They've lost 4 years in a row, man.
Yes. If it were at Ohio State with this group, I think that you would feel very confident. I mean, like extremely confident that even with the losing streak that they would overcome at this time. But in this circumstance, having to go on the road with a freshman quarterback, et cetera, and these consequences, I think it's going to be one of the really compelling Michigan-Ohio State games, at least going in. And then how it plays out on the field, we'll see. But I think it goes in as much more than number one versus number 21 or whatever the silly college football rankings say. It's much more than that. It's a significant game for both sides with great consequences. Michigan has a great chance to get in the playoff if they're able to pull that off, because then like the playoff rankings and the AP poll so weighted toward the SEC. I mean, teams that have multiple losses in the SEC, many of them are ranked in the later stages of the top 10 or early stages of the next group, the 11 to 20. Many of them. Michigan is ranked 21st, 22nd. So it's clear that there's I can't call it a bias, but there is a weight toward SEC achievement in this particular season. What the merit of that is, I don't know where it comes from, but that's where it is. And so for them to go into a game against Ohio State and win that game, you can't deny them anymore. You have to reassess a Michigan team that then has that victory on its resume. You can't just say, well, yeah, but no, because they've beaten the team that you said was number one. So that would completely change Michigan's horizons as well. So it's not just a game for Ohio State to be coronated. It's a game for Michigan to make it season. And I don't just mean, oh, that we beat our rivals like last year. I mean, they still have possibilities if they can get that done of going into the playoff and maybe achieving something.
Yeah, and I've got to say, if they're able to do that, I got to take my hat off to Michigan, although I don't have a lot of respect for them. I think that they have just become one of an organization that's, the Harbaugh thing. But to be able to do that, if they're able to get that done this year with what that's impressive. I've got to say, they don't have a great offense, a freshman quarterback that they battled through with. But man, if they can get it done and navigate those waters, hey, salute, man. But it's all you can say. But you also want to see another Big Ten team get in.
But I was going to say, if they lose that game, that first weekend in December in Indianapolis will be, and of course, obviously the Hoosiers have to do their job as well. But if those two undefeated teams show up in Indianapolis, it'll be the dream of what the Big Ten title game has been since it was invented 15 years ago, since they first introduced it.
When was the last time the Big Ten had a 1-2? It was the Ohio State Michigan back in 2005-ish. Long time. So absolutely. And it would ruin the redout of Indianapolis on December 6th with Indiana, Ohio State, Indiana, and Louisville in basketball on that same day. So it's Santa Claus might show up in his little red suit. You never know. Hey, before I let you out of here, I promised JD he's going to be on next. I'd get JD on, familiar face there for you. JD Campbell, former SID at Indiana.
Mike, how are you?
It is great to see you, JD. I love the clashing logos. It's you're repping everybody.
Well, I wanted to do Indiana wrestling. You know, Angel and those guys mean a lot to me. And I was in Cincinnati a couple weekends ago to visit my NKU brethren, and I had.
So you decided to wear a Cubs hat?
Well, it was either that or I don't know. I just decided. You know, I've been wearing the Reds gear.
You got 30 seconds to get it out.
Okay, if you want me to go change, I'll do it.
No. I mean, you got 30 seconds before I got to hit a break.
Okay, Mike, it's great seeing you. I'll check in with you. I went to Montgomery and with Buckley. We had a great time.
Oh, it's great to see you, JD. Absolutely. Glad to see you doing well.
Yep.
Take care, buddy. Perfect. You guys are perfect. That's perfect timing. Mike, thank you as always, brother. Look forward to doing this again next week. Now we got crossover going, so double duty.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jim.
You bet. Hey, we've got lots more coming up. JD Campbell's going to join us. We'll hear more from Kurt Cignetti. We'll hear from Shaka Smart. We'll hear from Fernando and Darren DeVries as well. Stick around. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages.
If you're looking he's an A++ every single interview. And he'd be a huge success in anything he decides to do one day when football ends. I mean, he's just a special, unique person. And it's all real.
That's Kurt Cignetti, of course, talking about Fernando Heisman-Doza. I asked him, JD Campbell joining us now, the former SID for IU, about if he had seen any of Fernando's post-game TV interviews every time, because every time they ask him the question, and as soon as they finish, he just turns right to the camera, and it's like he just grabs a mic and takes over and starts just going into being Fernando. And I just asked if he had seen that, and he got to get a kick out of it. But that's part of his personality, part of the trait that makes him a good leader. I think it's why those guys, they believe in him. Like he puts so much belief in his teammates that they realize that is real. And they have that belief in him. That's part of what is making this team so special. Offensively, man, they are never out of any game. We've seen it at Iowa and now again at Penn State, two of the toughest places in the country to play. But What a great thing to watch and to experience. Oh, you can't hear me.
Correct.
Man.
Can you hear me?
I can, sir. Maybe unplug those headphones and see if that helps. But we'll try to get you back in here in a second. Unplug those. Yeah, we'll see if he's got some earplugs plugged in and see if that helps when you get those unplugged. We'll try to get J.D. Campbell in there. You can't hear us right now. You'll have to check your audio settings maybe, unfortunately. And then we'll get you back in here. But reset. But right now, here's Kurt Cignetti from the other day.
Looking forward to getting back home Saturday after being on the road the last 2 weeks, 12 o'clock against Wisconsin, coming off top 25 win at home against Washington. They're a tough, gritty football team. I mean, they've had a murderer's row schedule. Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Iowa, Washington, Alabama, you name it. And, you know, I got a lot of respect for Coach Fickell. He's a proven winner. You know, the guy's had his starting quarterback available about 30% of the time during his tenure at Wisconsin. That's tough duty. So I think we need to understand that we're going to get everybody's best shot. You know, we're not sneaking up on anyone anymore. We got Iowa's best shot at Iowa. We got Penn State's best shot at Penn State. You know, Oregon was obviously a big game on the road, and we'll get Wisconsin's best shot. So we got to have a good week of preparation.
Kurt Cignetti talking about the upcoming game with Wisconsin, a team that has gone from not winning much. JD, I'm not sure if you can hear me now or not.
Jim, I can hear the video of Coach Cignetti, but I can't hear you.
That's very strange. Well, let's see. I don't even know what to do with that, man. I can just keep on rolling, and I unfortunately don't know sign language to try to do that, but I will say go out and come back in, and we will see what JD can get hicked up. We'll get him hooked back in here, but either way, Kurt Cignetti and Wisconsin coming up, a team that has not played well this year, but let's be honest. As you heard Cignetti say, he hasn't had his quarterback for virtually any of the time he was there. And now they're kind of healthy. They're coming off of a win over a team that I've had great respect for this year. The Washington Huskies, a great offense. Wisconsin, able to get it done. Now they have confidence, and JD looks like he's got confidence because he's got a smile on his face. So he can hear me. JD, I'm talking about this Wisconsin team that has not been very good all year, but has been hurt all year, getting healthy now, and they're coming off of a win. Although I I'm not going to sit here and try to do anything to pretend Indiana should have anything to fear from this game. I know that if I was playing coach speak and all that, and it's one game at a time, I get it. And that's how you have to approach it. If you're playing the game, I'm not playing the game. So I don't have to get fired up, JD. We don't have to get you fired up. We're not going to run you in for any deep passes. They should win this game easily. But I wonder, boy, when you get to this end of the season, JD, this team has a historic path in front of it. It's going to the Big Ten championship game. They'd have to lose to Wisconsin and Purdue for that not to happen, and that's not going to happen. So it would be very difficult from a human nature standpoint to not have that in your head already and not play maybe your top game.
Well, I think, you know, when you get to this point, I remember it seemed like in 2013 with men's basketball, you know, we went on the road and we beat Michigan State. That was when Victor Oladipo, they had the fake out, and they threw it down. Will Sheehy fouled Gary Harris. You know, this is a long journey, and anything can happen. And so just, you know, I think Kurt Cignetti, the remarkable job that he's done, and probably one of the best in the history of college football, easily the one of the best five coaching jobs that I've ever seen. But he's been through it all. He's seen it all. He's been at the top of the profession. He's also, you know, had to work his way up, and he's going to have his guys ready. And I know that they're going to have another sellout crowd these last two games. And that's, you know, I again, you're always worried because one slip, one run into a guy on the sideline, and with the cold weather, anything can happen. And so you just have to take it one play at a time. Stop worrying about the, you know, the whole Big Ten championship, CFP. When you get there, you'll get there. And take it one play at a time. And I know that's coach speak, but, you know, that's where you have to be. Because if not, your whole season can be derailed in one collision with the kicking net on the sidelines, you know, or running into a photographer. Hey, we lost the guy for the year at IU in basketball because Deron Davis ran into a photographer underneath the basket. So just focus on now. And I know everyone's like, ah, well, we're going to be this, going to be that. Just be patient in 2.5 weeks or whatever it is, 3 weeks. Then you can go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that stuff. I was down on the field not too long ago, and you know, the football field, and you know, there's a 4-inch drain that runs around the entire field.
Yes.
And that is what Michael Penix hit when he tore his knee. And now I understand why. I just stepped on that one day walking, and I was like, it caught my attention like that. I'm like, damn, I see how Michael Penix ripped his knee apart running as hard as he was, because it's just off a little bit of what the normal ground is, and it just seems weird. That seems like a dangerous thing to have there, I'll be honest with you.
I can't tell you how many times that I've stumbled, you know, jumping out of my chair. The pandemic was the great one at Florida State, where I'm running down for whatever reason, and my mind is thinking something else, and boom. You know, you got to be really careful. And think, you know, again, I you know, I'm a baseball idiot. Mickey Mantle hits the drain in Yankee Stadium because Joe DiMaggio doesn't go after the ball. Again, that's, you know, that's legend or whatever. And changed his entire career because he blew out his knee. He had knee problems his whole, and he was still unbelievable. So, you know, it's fun to predict and speculate and get excited. And I, you know, Indianapolis, you know, if this ends up coming to fruition, Indianapolis will be absolutely crazy.
Louisville and Indiana play basketball that day.
People will want to get early, and if they've got tickets to the Indiana-Louisville game, they'll just want to be there just to begin the preparation and anticipation, however libation that you put in your body starting however early in the day. It's going to be, you know what it's going to be like.
Oh, it's going to be big time. You get a bunch of Ohio State fans that are, any program that is used to winning like Ohio State is, the fans are the same. They're going to be arrogant because they've kind of earned that right, I guess you'd say. They're not. Oregon is a different beast. They're not going to be like that. They could probably win six championships and they'd still be welcome to Oregon. Thank you for coming to Eugene. We appreciate having you here, which is what it was like when I was out there recently, JD. It was amazing.
Well,
to see that.
My experience, Nebraska has the best fans.
They're great.
I've ever seen. When we were with Tom Allen, when we went there and we won that game and the bus was pulling out, their people were giving our team, they were clapping. And I'm like, oh my God, this is not Purdue basketball. You know,
this is not,
you know, wherever.
Which is great. You know what? I like having both. I'll be honest with you. I like the nicety, but I like having the salt. Yeah, it's what kind of what sports you just with certain, you got to have some salt. Like, I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty neutral. I try to be pretty down the middle for everything as a reporter. I don't like Kentucky. I grew up not liking Kentucky. I'm sorry, it's ingrained in me. I didn't care about Purdue. The hell with Purdue. I hated Kentucky. Grew up hating Kentucky. But I'm supposed to. It's like some Kentucky fans grow up hating Indiana. It's the same, man. You've got a Louisville, same deal, man. You know, but that's what makes it fun. It's not like if I saw a Kentucky fan drowning, it wouldn't help him. Sure, I would. You want to kick somebody's butt. You don't want them to not be able to enjoy it. So help a man out. Give him a helping hand. A nice wardrobe change that everybody has made sure that they saw that you went from the Cubs and the Reds. No, you didn't. The Cubs, you didn't have any Reds on. You had Indiana on to the Atlanta Braves.
Hank Aaron, I got this yesterday. 74.
Oh, yeah.
74. No name on the back, number 44. On my fourth silicone wedding ring, I was out working with Bob Morgan and some kids on Saturday, and I come home, I was going up to Hive to get some chili because it was, you know, Saturday. I loved their chili. I didn't realize that Hive and Lenny's were the same ownership. And I go, oh, I lost my wedding ring, so I better stop.
What's Hive and Lenny's? First of all,
Hive is the little bistro that's down off 45-46 that has a lot of unique foods. Our family, I really like the BLTs. Others like the chicken pot pie. I like the rotisserie chicken, but somebody turned me on to the chili, and it said voodoo chili, and I was like, oh, I can't stomach that. And then I sat in front of a guy, one of my friends, Jim Riggins, who had it, and I said, because I, you know, I love chili. And I said, I got to try that. And I did. And I'm like, okay, now I'm going to go here 17 days straight. I'm not going to do it today, but, you know, it was great. And so Hive's on the corner. And evidently the owner of Hive also owns Lenny's, which is a longtime Bloomington staple.
Lenny's Brewhouse?
Yes.
Where is that?
The last time I went, it was on Kirkwood, right by that IU gift shop, the fan shop, by the sample gates.
Sounds like a great new next sponsor for Indiana Sports Beat Radio, all these Bloomington locations. For those of you folks that are out listening outside of Bloomington, of course, whether you're up in Fort Wayne, Evansville, or Hammond, Chicago, when you're coming to an IU game, you can stop by. Just like everybody always has to go by Dagwood's. Not Dagwood's. Dagwood's closed, isn't it? Did Dagwood's
No,
closed?
I don't think Dagwood's.
Okay, Dagwood's is still open. There's something else closed.
Cafe Pizzeria back is the one that.
Yeah, well, that closed, of course. Still nothing in there. I'm surprised by that.
Well, it takes time. There was nothing in the old, I remember when Yogi's closed down, there was kind of a void, and, they got good chili too. So,
well, I love my chili, baby. It's not quite that time yet. I'm holding off.
It is definitely that time right now.
Well, it's going to be 71 Saturday, man. People are going to be wearing shorts to the football game. It's going to be a blast. And we've got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. J.D. Campbell is with us, and we'll hear more from Kurt Cignetti. We'll hear from Darren DeVries and company as they get off to a great win, 100-77 over Marquette at the United Center in Chicago on Sunday. Man, that was something to see, a team that was shorthanded in foul trouble from the start, but they end up winning that game with ease. Pretty amazing. We'll talk about that and much more on the other side. Right back from these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday early in the week. Before we get it warmed up, we're getting it cranked up so it gets warm at the end. 71 degrees expected on Saturday for Indiana football's last home game against Wisconsin. Kurt Cignetti wants to see, not the house will be packed, there's no doubt about that, as it is sold out, but he'd like to see it packed at the end of the third quarter and at the end of the fourth quarter, as it's senior night. And I'd say that the fans should, these guys have definitely deserved just sticking around and sending them off in the elite fashion in which they have played for the last few years for Indiana, and will continue to do so. But this is the fans' opportunity to salute this team, and I think they deserve that, JD. I mean, getting fans to stay through a game at Indiana is still a process, even though with the success right now, although it's getting better, it's just something that's going to take time. It's a lot of habits, old habits to change.
Well, again, I think, one of the things that you look at as a fan, and you sit there and you're like, oh man, if I can get out of here and beat the traffic, I might take advantage of that. And certainly, I've been to two games and both the Lions, and we're going up Thanksgiving, and I'm like, okay, this is when I have to go to the bathroom. This is when I have to do this. This is when we have to do that. And so I would just worry about, enjoying, having a good time, support the team. You're getting, the kind of public, when I'm sitting there walking yesterday and Rich Eisen's talking about what a waste it is for conference championships, and I'm not saying it is or isn't, but when Rich Eisen is talking about Indiana and Ohio State potentially playing, like you and I were talking earlier, you're like, but that was never happening. That was never happening. And I don't have the media guide in front of me, and maybe next break I'll go get it. But we weren't even talking college basketball games until usually Thanksgiving week. That was the time where it was going. And you got Louisville and Kentucky tonight.
I know, on a Tuesday. I can't believe that.
Well, again, it's all programming. There's great programming every day and every night between all the sports. And, it's just where we are today. It's just like seeing a T-shirt made with the caricature of the catch on Saturday already out. And it's a whole new world, and good for the kids, but great for Indiana.
You've seen a lot of IU. I think that catch has to go. We were talking about it earlier with Mike. Because of the difficulty of this catch, first of all, how high it was, how he had to climb the ladder to get. I'm looking at a copy of it right now, right before it if it would open, right before it hits his hands. And he's not that far below the goalpost, and as he continues to go up, and as soon as it hits his hands, he just looks to the ground and starts contorting his body. It was just an amazing thing. And then you add in the fact that it was the culmination of this 80-yard that turned into an 87-yard drive with a minute 10 to go and no timeouts. It was just remarkable with all that was on the line. It makes it pretty remarkable. But I wonder, I sent out a tweet yesterday, and I wish I could post these two pictures together. I don't have them, but between that picture and the picture of Michael Penix, are those the two greatest photos in IU football history?
Well, I can't answer that because it's been a long time, there are certain plays in
for what they meant for what they both.
But I still, again, my moment for me personally was the Austin Starr kick against Purdue to get the Hoosiers to play 13 that year. Now, again, that's my first year. It's my first experience with IU football. And, so I have that embedded in my head. And
but I meant for the program itself overall. Stake?
Yeah.
Ironically, both of these came against Penn State.
There are always different iconic things that happen. And depending upon if you were there or you were watching it, they become ingrained in your mind. And, I think those two plays that you saw, you're talking about, absolutely. Absolutely, those were, as good as you'll find. And that's great that you've got those kind of memories. And, maybe the guy will win an ESPY for it. Maybe.
You know what?
I mean,
you're right. I didn't think of that, JD. That's I'm sure they have a category for most thrilling last second player.
You just gotta let everything play out. And there's so much. People are going to forget the regular season once the championship series gets here, and it's like the World Series. You don't remember much about the regular season, but you sure remember the way the Dodgers threw, and you remember how that rookie for the Blue Jays threw from East Carolina. So yeah, those are a lot of fun. Those are a lot of fun. They're iconic. And when next time you walk in a mall in Indiana, you're probably going to see that photo in a framed glass, and you can bid on it like you can when you walk over at College Mall.
Exactly.
It's
ironic. I don't go to the mall. I happened to be there recently, and I saw exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you mean.
Well, Jim, you got to go to the mall to walk when it's like this.
Oh.
You got to do the indoors.
Mall walking.
I've got a few places that, it's like, okay, I'm going to go here today. I'm going to go there today and do that. And today I'm going indoors to a few places. I'll get my steps in and, come home and then relax and have no responsibilities at all, except, what I choose to eat, what we're going to have for dinner tonight. So
that's a good day. That's a good day's work. Hey, I've got a question for you. I had it posed to me yesterday and I tried to explain it. It's about last second drives what Indiana had, and people always ask, why are those last second drives always so successful? Well, they're not always so successful. For one, you just remember the successful ones. You don't remember the ones that didn't happen. But the ones that are successful, why are they successful? I think it's a confluence of a bunch of things. First, the offense is already in a gunslinger mode. You got to go for broke, so to speak, within the confines of what you can do, especially after you get sacked on the first play. Now you're really behind the gun. But anyway, you're playing a looser, number one. Number two, you're going to call plays in succession that you would not have normally called in succession on a normal drive. The defense seems to have a tendency to get a little more conservative, which opens things up a little bit for offenses. And if you have an offense like Indiana, they'll take advantage of that because they don't seem to get nervous. And that's exactly what happened. But there was also spectacular plays made along the way, and that has to happen. So all of that stuff has to come together. But it's allowed to happen partly because I think the defense gets a little conservative and the offense just goes into gunslinger mode. It's a go for broke thing. And when it works, and it's a thing of beauty.
Well, it's not like that's not something that they don't practice. They do that.
Yeah. And that they've done successfully this year against Iowa.
Well, and so, but the thing is, when you look at teams that have a propensity to come through in that, it's the confidence in each other. And they even when you have a bad result on a play, like the first play was a sack, wasn't it, of that drive?
Yeah. That's why I couldn't figure out why people kept saying an 87-yard drive when I'm like, wait a minute, it was an 80-yard drive, but it was a 7-yard loss on the sack.
Sure. And the thing about it is sometimes when you have a play that goes negative or you miss out on something, the panic meter goes up. And when you watch that team, there was no panic in anything. They were prepared. And that's on the coaching staff. They were prepared. Penn State, IU won the game. Penn State didn't lose the game. Okay? And because we've all been in that same position where we've been beaten, you know, by a remarkable series of events. I just think that the confidence that that team has in one another, they're not pressing. And when you fear losing, that's when, you know, maybe it doesn't go your way. How many comebacks and stuff did we see between college, NFL, you know, all of that this weekend? Just, you know, I mean, you practice it and you believe it and it can go your way. That was a great effort by Penn State, considering everything that they've gone through this year, unfortunately, for them. But, nah, man, that what you saw was next level, absolute, we're here. And you can knock us down all you want on your radio talk shows in Birmingham. Or wherever. Or, you know what? We're just going to line up, go toe-to-toe and play.
And I think did hear our buddy Paul Feinbaum pretty much acknowledge yesterday that he's like, it was about Indiana. He goes, oh, yeah, I don't know if I've talked to all the stuff. I've talked to Indiana, but I have to say, that was the most impressive drive of the year. So, sure. Hey, that's him saying something positive about Indiana is a shock because he just out of his head. Indiana's living in his head rent-free.
Well, and he's living in a lot of Indiana fans' head.
That's true.
Why do you care?
That's okay, exactly
now
right.
Now I'm going to go on my, you know, I'm going to be cranky.
Do it. It's true, but that's why people have to be able to ignore that.
Why do you care what somebody somewhere else says about your program? Because he doesn't have an ounce of ability to impact who goes where, who plays what, and whatever. narrow your awareness, okay? Get off social media.
Get off Facebook.
Stop worrying about what everybody says or thinks about Indiana, because you know what? The people, the majority of the people, they believe Indiana. Wow. Wow. Indiana, that team's good. So just relax. You know, if you worry about what Paul Feinbaum says, and that, but that's his job. If they worry about what you say, Jim, that's your job. Just.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what he's supposed to do. He's the SEC mouthpiece. He is not anything other than that. And I don't blame him for that. It's what he gets paid to do, to be honest with you.
Well, and that's
his fan base wants that.
But every fan base wants that. Every town now has a Paul Feinbaum like. Every community has somebody that's there to stir the pot and get you to react and get you angry. So, you know, who cares what anybody – look, there's nobody who doesn't respect Kurt Cignetti and what this team and program has done over the last 2 years. And I don't think that there's anybody that wants to play him.
Well, I look forward to re-listening to that, and yeah. I look forward to doing this again next week. I'm going to try to get Tom to join us here sometime soon. He's been on with us several times, but sure. greatly appreciate you being with us today, as always. Big thanks to Mike DeCourcy, of course, as well. Most importantly, I thank each and every one of you guys. JD, we'll see you next week, brother.
See you next week, man.
Have a good one. Everybody else, stay warm. We're back tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.